It is almost the end of the season on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. We've still got daily podcast for a little while. I'm Chris Towers, joined by Al Melchior and Scott White. Fellas, the happy magic Friday.
Oh, happy Friday. I was going to say the magic number is seven.
Seven?
Seven more, including this one, daily podcasts, and then it is eliminated.
Hopefully.
Oh, eliminated?
Whoa, yeah, we're still going to be
daily podcasts.
Don't we clinch?
What's our?
Yeah, I guess you're right. We clinch the podcast championship.
Yeah, so we just, you know, we get to party.
Pop champagne bottles.
Yeah.
Jump in the Arizona Diamondbacks pool.
Hopefully.
Get baseballs thrown at us by the Arizona Diamondbacks after doing that because we're weirdos. So, yeah, almost. We're glad you're still listening if you are. If you're not listening, obviously you won't hear this, and we're glad you're, I'm not going to say that. But thanks for listening still, and if you're in the championship of your league, we've got Week 25 advice coming up a little later in the podcast, but first, the big news and the sad news. Jung Ho Kang's season is over. He was having a really fun season. Chris Coughlin, takeout slide on a double play ball. It was just an awkward play. I don't think it was dirty. People have said it was dirty. I don't think it was. It was just a play.
Yeah, I agree. Unfortunate, obviously.
A displaced lateral tibial plateau fracture and a meniscal tear. He had surgery last night, 6 to 8 months recovery time, so that could impact the start of next season.
I would assume so. And in fact, I just I talked about it on yesterday's podcast, writing up the little piece on the third base rankings for next year, and I just slotted him in, I think, 7th or 8th, based largely on a shortstop eligibility.
Yeah.
But with this and possibility of him missing the first month or more, and I just think of instances in the past where we thought it was going to be a month, and then it ended up being half a season, and just a lot of risk there, even considering the appeal of being shortstop eligible. So now he's 13th in the rankings for next year, with obviously room to fluctuate as we hear about his rehabilitation. Yeah,
but he was on pace for a really nice season, hitting .287. He was on pace for 18 home runs over 162 games, scoring some runs, getting on base. Where would you still take him as a top 15 third baseman next season?
Well, I did say 13th, Chris.
Okay.
If you were listening.
I wasn't listening.
But
thanks for calling me out. You could have just gone with it.
Yeah, I know.
It's more fun this way.
Yeah, it was.
You know, I've got to say,
I do that all the time for whatever it's worth.
I do want to point out, if I'm a little shaky today, it's because I have our real host hovering in the room, and it's just I'm not confident right now.
It's like when you're a teacher and the administrator comes in to observe.
All of a sudden,
you can't write straight on the whiteboard.
Our little Friday fun day has been disrupted. I feel like he's just going to take my headset and throw me out of the room if I mess up again.
Yeah, no, I think it was all right until he started doing eye rolls.
You know? Just loud, exasperated sighs. He's throwing stuff. So, yeah, Jung Ho Kang, number 13 at third base. Do you still draft him with the intention of a starting shortstop role when he's healthy?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You really shouldn't be drafting him as a third baseman. You're drafting him as a shortstop because it's a much weaker position. I imagine he'll still come in top 10 there whenever I get around to doing it.
All right. And some of the other big news from Thursday. Jimmy Nelson was hit in the side of the head by a comebacker. He does not have any concussion symptoms from what I was reading, but just a bruise right now, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, incredible.
Straight up. Full-on blow to the head.
No idea whether he'll still be expected to pitch this season. It wouldn't be surprising if he didn't, but the fact that there's no concussion issue right now seems to indicate that it's less serious than it could be.
Yeah, if he pitches again this year, I'll be really surprised.
Yeah. Devin Travis shut down for the season, set to have exploratory shoulder surgery. What do we think about him? He played 61 games, hit 8 home runs, .304. 859 OPS. Those are really good numbers for a shortstop.
For a second baseman?
For a second baseman,
yeah.
Sorry.
That's two.
I don't like...
That one actually needed to be...
I just wanted to make sure I heard the right name.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like the sound of exploratory surgery, of them cutting you open and exploring.
Just poking.
Trying to figure out what's going on after you're already open.
Yeah.
So it kind of reminds me of Jerickson and Profar and the nightmare he's had coming back from his shoulder injury that was very hard to explain at first. As things stand now, I have Travis 10th at second base. I've already written the second base piece. It's out there. He's 10th, and I think based on performance, he deserves it. But it's a risky pick, and certainly I'm going to be keeping an eye on how his recovery goes and whether or not they find something. If they don't find anything, I don't necessarily take that as good news. I'd rather them find something and say we fixed it.
I would hope they find like a shoulder and shoulder parts.
Yeah.
If they find nothing, that would be really worse.
Yeah, I would.
Well, Dickey could pitch without a UCL, so, you know.
That's true.
Maybe he can hit and field without a shoulder.
Travis hit 6 home runs in his first 20 games. At the time, it looked like an outlier based on his minor league track record. He might have hit 10 home runs in a minor league season, but never much more. He was a pretty low power guy. And then he only hit 2 in his next 42 games. Now, a lot of injury concerns over those next 40 games. He missed a time with a couple of different injuries, and it was just he never really seemed fully healthy.
Yeah.
But do you blame the power outage that happened there on the injury, or is it just regression to the mean?
I'm going to blame it on the injury just because of the nature of the injury. But it's a hard one to tease out, like you said, because the numbers were at least a bit out of line with what Travis had done in the minors. But, yeah, once he injured the shoulder, he was just never really right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to trust what he did when he was healthy.
Now,
I kind of saw Travis in the minors, though, as one of those, you know, kind of what we've seen from Mookie Betts. A guy who shows 12 to 15 homer power, and then he comes to the majors and maybe 20-plus homer power. Because last year, Travis hit 10 home runs and 396 at-bats in the minors. He had a 16-homer season before that. I don't think there – I think it's, you know, provided the shoulder recovery goes well, I would predict Travis would be a 20-homer guy at some point based on that progression.
And the park he plays in.
Yes.
All right, and Giancarlo Stanton on hold due to, quote, an abnormal amount of scar tissue in his left hand. He's still hoping to return this season, but clearly he's running out of time. Are you still holding on to Giancarlo Stanton?
Sure. I mean, if he can play in week 26, if that still matters in my league. Actually, I had somebody tweet me a question yesterday asking about asking about picking up Will Myers because it's a daily lineup league. There's a weekend series now in Colorado. And I said, yeah, well, you know, play Myers for the series and then replace him with somebody. And said, like, Giancarlo Stanton. Now, this was before this news came out. I said, good plan. But so maybe you can't execute that plan week 25, but maybe still week 26. That he could replace somebody who has a bad schedule or bad matchups.
Yeah, it's really concerning how much longer this has taken him to come back than anybody expected at the start. And I think he's set to swing a bat, to try to swing a bat on Saturday, but every time that's happened, there's been another setback. So it's concerning, I think. But if you have a roster spot to spare, I think that makes sense. Speaking of giving up on players, I want to go into some of the worst hitters in baseball in the second half of the season to see if we're finally just ready to give up on these guys. These guys are all in the bottom 30 in OPS since the All-Star break, and a lot of them are still starting in a significant amount of CBSSports.com leagues. So I want to ask if you're ready to pull the plug on Albert Pujols. He's one home run in September. He's hitting .203 since August 1st, and the foot's bothering him. Sub 500 OPS in September. Are you ready to give up on Albert Pujols?
Pulling the plug.
Oh.
And, wow. Yeah, the plantar fasciitis thing is definitely the clincher for me.
Yep.
I might do it anyway, but that seals it.
I wouldn't have a problem with sitting him. In fact, in the hitter piece I'm going to write today, the Angels have bad matchups, and I'm going to mention Pujols as a possible sit, but I don't think he's must-sit. I mean, look at what Miguel Cabrera did last September when everybody was writing him off in August. He was battling a couple of injuries,
but
too.
But he wasn't this bad for this long of a stretch.
We're
talking about a month and a half where he's hurt. If it was just a month and a half where he was healthy and it was just you know, he's having a bad 40-game stretch, I think I would agree with you.
Well, we've just during his tenure with the Angels, we've seen stretches like this from Pujols, and he always comes out of it. I can't guarantee he's going to the last 2 weeks of the season, but, you know, I don't know that Greg Bird is what I'm going to get from him is worth passing up what I could potentially get from Pujols.
I think we discussed it a little bit on Wednesday, so we can move on to Salvador Perez, who is still 91% owned. He's been pretty miserable since the All-Star break, hitting .243, .276 on base, .362 slugging. He's 91% owned. Are you at least sitting Salvador Perez?
I'm definitely sitting Salvador Perez. Well, one catcher league for sure.
Yeah.
I consider it even in a two-catcher league.
And I'm not. I just don't think even in a one-catcher league, there's not a good enough alternatives at the position. It's not like... I know Wellington Castillo is still fairly available, but he hasn't been so productive recently either. So why not just stick with the guy who plays all the time and at least get some singles, you know?
Well, that's the thing, is that if he was hitting .280, that would make sense. Would you rather have JT Realmuto in your starting lineup or Salvador Perez?
I would definitely rather have Realmuto.
Let me see what, because see, Realmuto's season numbers look very much like these numbers for Perez.
690 OPS for Realmuto. Perez is 636,
which is close enough given the difference in upside. for me to lean Perez,
and
still.
I'll lean Realmuto because I think the chances of getting his upside are much greater than Perez's because he's not going to get less tired. He's been those numbers, the 630, whatever OPS that Perez has put up was front loaded.
Yeah.
So he's been giving you a lot less than that lately. I think there is enough of a gap there. I'd go Realmuto.
Wait, no. I think Perez, you were giving the number
second
for the bad stretch. Yeah.
My bad then.
Realmuto in that same stretch is hitting .263 with six home runs and a .742 OPS. So that's the, it's, you know, obviously All-Star break is kind of an arbitrary marker, but it gives us a clean split to look at. And I just think Realmuto is also trending upwards, an OPS over 1,000 in September, three home runs so far. I think I'd start him over Perez. What about Jacoby Ellsbury, 80% started? He's hitting .204 with a .561 OPS since the All-Star break.
Well, I'd be more likely with him, I think, than the other two, because I'm not convinced the upside is there anymore. In a five outfielder league, particularly if I needed steals, I just don't see how I would sit him. But in a points league, I have already sat him. I picked up Jason Wirth and started him this week instead of Ellsbury, which is, to some degree, I guess, giving in. But it's not like I'm dropping Ellsbury in that league either.
Yeah, no, I'm with Scott on that all the way.
All right, Yadier Molina, kind of a poor man Salvador Perez, actually hitting better though. What's that?
All right. Well, I'm going to do it then. Yadier.
Molina.
I thought Scott was going to go for the hat trick, but
look, we know
he called him Yadier.
We know,
because that's what I usually call him. So
we know names are not my strong suit. Among my many weaknesses is the pronunciation of names. Yadier Molina. Did I get it right?
Nailed it.
All right. 10 runs, hitting .253, two home runs since the All-Star break. Would you rather have him or Salvador Perez down the stretch?
I don't think there's much upside left with Molina, so I'd much rather have Perez, and I'm happy to pull the plug on Molina if I hadn't already.
Me too.
Johnny Peralta, his teammate. There are actually three Cardinals on this list who are having miserable second halves. Johnny Peralta has been bad for a long time, longer than the All-Star break, but only three home runs, 16 RBI in 54 games, hitting .228. Pull the plug?
Yeah, I pull the plug, and that's not to say that I don't think that of the players we're talking about, I think Peralta is somebody I probably have more confidence in. But as we've talked about earlier in the week, there's just a lot of highly available shortstops who have been hitting really well that you don't need to count on that from Peralta.
Well, how do you feel about these players? John Lamb, Michael Lorenzen, Brandon Finnegan, Taylor Youngman, Ariel Pena, Willy Peralta, and whoever replaces Jimmy Nelson for the Brewers.
It's a lot of mediocre starting pitchers.
List of matchups.
provided they hold, which is no guarantee this time of year, of course. But, I mean, it's the Reds and Brewers rotation, so how much better is it going to get? That's who the Cardinals are facing next week. And if you're a Peralta owner, I mean, assuming that the Corey Seegers and the Francisco Lindors have been picked up, I think I'd just rather stick with him than with those matchups than roll the dice. Suarez, the Reds don't have good matchups. They're on the bad list. In fact, they have the very worst matchups. So, yeah, I would prefer Peralta over Suarez.
They're on the bad list. You are like baseball Santa Claus.
Naughty or nice.
Jay Bruce, 78% started. 201. He's having a pretty bad season. Not even just for the rest of the season, because I think he's a pretty easy sit for the rest of the season. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. Plus, I've heard somewhere that the Reds have bad matchups.
I have heard that, too.
And, yeah, they do.
What do you think of Jay Bruce moving into next season? Do you think there's still a chance that he pulls out of this?
I think there definitely is. I could see him having a big year next year because you never know what to expect from him month
this
to month, year to year.
This is too really bad. He actually, I mean, relative to how bad he was last season, this is a banner year for Jay Bruce. He's hitting .230 with a .731 OPS. That's a drastic improvement over last season. But now we're talking about two straight years where he's failed to hit 30 home runs. Unless he hits 9 in the next 16 or so games, he's going to fall under 30 home runs.
Jay Bruce could do that.
He could do that. And yeah. my impression of Jay Bruce would change pretty dramatically if he finished the season with 9 home runs in 16 games. But now we're talking about two straight seasons where he's under 30 home runs, under .250 batting average. There's I don't know how you draft him in a 3 outfielder league next season.
Yeah, this is one of my elementary tenets of fantasy baseball. You can give a guy a pass for one bad year, but two in a row. Not to say they never come back from that, but I don't think you're giving them a pass anymore. And I don't think anyone else is either, so there's really no reason for you to. I mean, as a late-round flyer, fine.
Yeah,
and maybe that... No, I don't really think that's underselling him. I don't think Bruce is going to be much more than a late rounder next year in standard mixed leagues, barring the 9 home run in 16 game scenario. But, I mean, just compare it to Evan Longoria, who hasn't even been as bad these last 2 years. And he wouldn't be a late round flyer, but he's definitely fallen off the last 2 years. And I think you'd agree, Al, that you're not regarding him the same way anymore.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And I'm not regarding Bruce the same way, but I think more for the reason that you stated, which is you don't have to go out on a limb to draft the upside that might still be there for Bruce next year.
I will say, how old do you think Jay Bruce is? How old do you think Jay Bruce will be on opening day next season?
I'm going to guess 29.
I was going to say 28. He's not old.
He turns 28 and 29 in early April. I thought he was a year or two older than that. So it is weird how much he's fallen off, and I think a lot of it can last season we attributed to just the knee injury. But this season, does he have that excuse?
As far as we know, he doesn't. Who knows?
That's the worrisome part of it.
And that's the difference between 1 and 2 years is 1 year you're looking for excuses. We were doing it with Jason Kipnis. We were doing it with Longoria. We're doing it with Bruce, I guess. But now we're not.
All right. Are we pulling the plug on Colton Wong? 73% started, .245, 2 home runs since the All-Star break, .623 OPS.
For this season, I am. Even with the good matchups.
Yeah. So who are you starting over him, I guess? Like, would you start a Jed Jerko over him?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Who else is out there? Solarte, I guess. He's not as available.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. Yeah, if I'm being perfectly honest, in the leagues where I drafted Wong as my starter, I haven't been that motivated to swap him out. But maybe I should be. I don't think like the difference between him and Pujols is Pujols could just blow up and have this 4-homer week, and you're like, oh man, why'd I choose to sit him now? But I don't think Wong's going. You don't have the there's not as much FOMO.
Yeah.
There. Did I use that properly?
Yes, you did.
Yes.
All right. Alcides Escobar somehow still started in 63% of leagues. Pull the plug on him entirely, right?
Yeah, I actually would have done that quite a while ago.
FOMO just sounds dirty.
480 OPS for Alcides Escobar since the All-Star break. It's miserable.
Yeah.
And Victor Martinez, how do you view him? Because I don't think there's a question. You're not, if you're still alive out there,
we're
not starting
alive.
Victor.
Everyone listening to this podcast is still alive.
I don't know. You don't know. Maybe.
I guess I don't.
Have you been watching Fear the Walking Dead?
I have been.
I haven't. Is it good?
I haven't decided yet. It's
okay.
It's
okay.
Feels derivative for sure. I mean, it is.
I think that's
derivative.
That's kind of the point.
But it feels it.
It's derivative of something that is derivative in and of itself.
I guess that's true. But I think the difference is it feels derivative. Like it feels like it's depending on it's almost like it doesn't need to carry itself because it's already.
Yeah.
The other shows done the heavy lifting for it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. So speaking of The Walking Dead, Victor Martinez, what do we think of him next year?
Yeah, I think we'd be pretty low on VMart next year. He had that little brief stretch around the All-Star break where it looked like he was back, and you know then he wasn't. So, you know, given the career trajectory and the age, and the long history of health issues with him, somebody else can have him.
He has been, in terms of real-world value, maybe the worst hitter in baseball this season, based on the fact that he's a DH who's sporting a 644 OPS for the season.
Oof.
Do you have any hope for him bouncing back next season, given that he's only DH or utility eligible?
I can't say I have no hope, but he's probably we're talking late rounder again, I think, for VMart. He's so old.
And that four-year contract he signed this offseason, the assumption was that it would pay out good value in the front, and then he would have a season like this in 2017.
Whoops.
And you could kind of live with it. It's not looking great. Sorry, Tigers fans.
I'm glad you put it that way, because I feel like a lot of times that's missed when people are breaking down contracts. Oh, by the end of that contract, it's going to look really ugly. Well, I think the people who agree to that contract understand that,
yeah,
but
nobody,
that's the only way you can get the first few years of production.
Coming off last season, he was a $20 million player per year.
Yeah.
And they got him for $14 million per year or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And so part of that, getting him a little cheaper than he would have been on a one-year contract, is you have to pay a little inflation at the end of the contract.
Yeah.
The thought process was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was a
bit of a gamble.
Yes.
But it was a worthwhile one,
and really
I don't think that's why Dombrowski's not in Detroit anymore.
He had knee surgery after he signed the contract. Like that's not on anybody.
No.
You know. All right, let's move on to Thursday's standouts. We had some big performances by some predictable names, your Mike Trouts, your Chris Bryants. But the biggest performance of all, Omar Infante. He has started in 2% of leagues. What if someone is in the playoffs and starting Omar Infante against you? What if that happened to you? How unbelievably upset would you be about Omar Infante having his one good game on September
17th? Well, I think we've probably had those. I know I've had those moments.
It would have to be a deep league, because anyone in a 12-team league, if they had Infante in their lineup, they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
3 for 4, a home run, and 7 RBI.
But
he drove in 7 of the Royals' 8 runs last night.
I didn't mean to interrupt. Where are you going?
No, because I was going to – I mean, your point was, you know, I think more important than, you know, the point I was going to make. I just remember, was it last year when you won a championship with Bruce Chen?
that was voluntary. I actively picked up Bruce Chen as a two-start SPARP. I think I did that a couple years in a row in the podcast league, and I think it paid off both times. Like, just rolling the dice.
You know? So somebody got chenned.
Yeah.
Whoever you were facing.
Yeah.
Right. So it happens.
Mike Trout is back. 2 home runs, 3 walks. He struck out in his last at-bat, though, so a little concerning. He went 2 for 3 last night. He's hitting .280 with a .1082 OPS in the month of September. Had a miserable August, but 5 home runs in 15 September games. Safe to say Mike Trout's back?
I think it's safe to say.
1,000-plus OPS in 4 out of 6 months this season. And even with his August slide, leads the American League in OPS. He's not the number one player in fantasy next season, but he doesn't fall too far after that, right? Top three at least.
Yeah, being second or third behind Bryce Harper is no disgrace.
And Chris Bryant. I want to talk about where you would draft Chris Bryant next season. He went 3 for 4 with 2 doubles, 1 run, 1 walk. 3 hits in consecutive games. He's hitting .274 with .368 on base, .492 slugging. 24 home runs is a little bit of a disappointment, right?
Sure.
Is it?
I expected about 30. I mean, it's not, and there's, you know,
and he's still on pace for 27 now.
Sure.
Like, the season isn't over yet.
Yeah.
So that's not far off.
Yeah. Yeah, 24 sounded farther from 30. You're right, yeah.
I think 30 was the kind of lower edge of the expectations for him, considering he hit 43 in the minors in 139 games last season.
Well, you have to be realistic. He's a rookie, and he didn't have the full season.
With the hindsight of having seen him only hit 24 home runs as a rookie.
Only.
But I think it's a lot easier to be reasonable about him now than we were on April 13th or whenever he got called up. Because I
think I was the highest of all of us coming into the year.
Over 35.
I know. I said 31.
Okay.
On March 31st, my 31st birthday, I said 31 home runs for Chris Bryant. Okay. Check the tape. Check the tape.
I could. I'm not going to.
Did you go to Baskin Robbins that day, too?
I should have.
Yeah.
That would have been a good birthday.
So where are we drafting Chris Bryant next season? 24 home runs, 93 RBI, hitting in the heart of, you know,
Dixie.
What could be the best lineup in baseball moving forward. You know, the Blue Jays are tough to top, but this Cubs team has that kind of potential.
Mm-hmm. You want to round? Because, I ranked third
ranking
baseman.
Ranking at third base.
Oh, at third base, because I was thinking probably like early fourth round is when I target him.
There's a third base. It's Donaldson. It's Machado or Arenado. I could see either one of those. You go in second with either one of those.
And it works because it rhymes. Mm-hmm.
It's Frazier. It's Bryant. And I think those five, other than the dispute over who's 2 and 3, are pretty much locked in.
Any chance you take Bryant over Frazier, given the second half swoon 2 years in a row?
No. I mean, Frazier's come out of it here recently. There's not any chance. And I don't think there's zero risk with Bryant. He's on pace to strike out more than 200 times, too.
We knew that. We knew he was going to strike out a ton.
But that's even... There's not many players who strike out 200 times in a season.
Nope.
Hopefully he gets better.
I think you can assume he'll improve.
Yeah.
But I think he's always going... It's like Giancarlo Stanton. You assume that there's going to be a high strikeout rate, but he should be a high enough BABIP guy, and he should hit for enough power that he makes up for that. Are you expecting 35 home runs next year?
It's his 32nd birthday, so.
But it'll still be on the 31st.
Doesn't change every year? Wouldn't move on to the 32nd?
They don't extend March. It's not a leap year thing.
That'd be so perfect next year, though.
Expect 35 home runs.
I'm
getting to the core of expect, what that word means.
46% fly ball rate is really high. One of the highest rates in baseball. His hard hit rate is very good, and his 15.9% home run to fly ball ratio is fine.
And he's pulled a lot, too, right?
And he pulls a ton, 42%. There's no question about his raw power and his raw power to all fields. And so that makes me think that the 15.9% home run to fly ball rate is a little low and could stand to go up quite a bit. It's not in the top 30 for the season. It's below guys like David Peralta, Adam Jones, Shin-Soo Choo, guys that you would think, reasonably speaking, Chris Bryant should be ahead of. You would think he's more in the Ryan Braun, Jose Abreu territory, and that's only 15th. And that would give him an extra probably 4 or 5 home runs this season.
Well, I don't know that anybody would be surprised by 35 home runs next year, but to expect it, you know, would I project him for 35? I'm probably going to take the slight under on that.
Okay.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, too. If I expected him for 35 home runs, I probably would put him ahead of Frazier.
That's why I think I would take him above Frazier, because I think 35 is a reasonable expectation for him.
It's reasonable. It's reasonable. But is it the most likely? I'm not sure.
Okay. I don't think it's the most likely outcome. I will say that.
Okay.
All right. Thomas Pham, 2% owned. Are you picking up Thomas Pham, who is 3 for 5, a double, triple, 2 RBI last night, started 3 of the last 4 games for the Cardinals and went 7 for 12 with 6 extra base hits and 8 RBI in that span?
I'm not. And I've been intrigued by Pham, but it also seems that, you know, there've been a couple of times where it seemed like he was getting locked into more regular play. And then as soon as he cools off, he's not.
And like we've talked about all week, so many outfielders in St. Louis.
Yeah, I don't know that Holiday is really going to play much, because what I was reading yesterday is that the only reason he's up with the team is that there's no minor league affiliate for him to rehab with. So I'm going to guess that, you know, Holiday doesn't play a lot, but yeah, there's still a lot of options there.
All right, let's move on to the rotation. Marco Estrada, 8 shutout innings, 4 strikeouts. He has a 2.70 ERA since the All-Star break, 84% owned. Do you feel comfortable starting Marco Estrada moving forward?
I have felt comfortable starting him for a while now. I don't think he's must start, and I don't think he's as... The upside isn't as interesting as it was back in his Brewers heyday, because the strikeouts are down and the walks are up, but he's still a low whip guy. We'll get burned with home runs from time to time, but he's fairly reliable.
Let's compare him to some of the other starting pitchers from last night. Would you rather start Marco Estrada or Yordano Ventura, who's starting in 61% of leagues, hasn't had a quality start in his last 3 after going 5 innings, 3 runs allowed yesterday?
It would depend on matchups.
Okay.
Particularly if Ventura were at home. But I guess in a vacuum, yeah, I'd probably go Estrada.
Marco Estrada or Colby Lewis, 49% owned, a second good start in a row, 2 earned runs in 6 innings this time after he flirted with a no-hitter in his previous start. Colby Lewis or Marco Estrada?
Estrada, definitely.
Estrada, yeah.
Lewis is...
He's the poor man's Estrada.
I guess. He's one wacky pitcher.
Marco Estrada or Lance McCullers, who had a quality start, 5 strikeouts, 3 walks, 3 runs allowed in 6 innings yesterday. 3 quality starts in 5 since his return. He has a 3.19 ERA. He's 35% started, 72% owned. McCullers or Estrada?
I'm not saying anything bad about Lance McCullers ever again.
So. Have we talked about that on the podcast?
I don't think so. Not when I've been on it. No.
You got a... What was the exact term?
Well, he called me a hater.
Yeah.
He said,
Haters going hate.
Because I advised somebody to not start him when he actually had a great start.
Yes, 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 yes.
You motivated him. All right, so Lance
That's
McCullers
one interpretation.
Or Marco Estrada.
I will go McCullers there.
I kind of want to break down that tweet, haters going hate, because he was perfectly willing to...
Did he spell out haters? Drop the word to
fit the expression haters gonna hate.
Yeah.
But he wasn't willing to go with the faux word gonna instead of going.
Maybe
was it going or go in? It was going.
Oh, okay.
Right?
You added the G?
I think G-O-I-N.
Oh, going.
So maybe it was a subtle throw out to Toronto Blue Jays utility infielder Ryan Goins.
I thought it was going, and that makes it less interesting to me, because he did go with the faux word, but it was the wrong one.
All right, so Marco Estrada or Lance McCullers? Don't be afraid of Lance. Take a strong stand.
I don't want to be a hater, but
I thought you were going to say take a strong stance.
I just trust Estrada more right now. I think McCullers comes the closest of this group, and I wouldn't have a problem starting him, but I don't know. I just feel more comfortable with Estrada.
All right, I think the following one is easy. Marco Estrada or Hector Santiago, who had allowed 2 earned runs in 13 innings over his previous 2 starts, 5 runs in 2/3 of an inning. He is all over the place.
Yeah.
It's either, like, decent quality, or he just completely melts down.
Well, he's not good against righties, and he's not really good on the road. Now, this recent string of just, like, is it all over the place starts? I don't know if it follows that particular pattern. But at home, against a lineup with a fair number of lefties in it, I think I would still trust Santiago. But
he has, like, an ERA near 6 since the All-Star break. Like, he's... especially since the All-Star break, high walks, high home run rate, not many strikeouts.
But
he is failing all 3 phases of the FIP game.
He also had like a 4-start stretch that was incredible, right? During that span?
I'll look it up. I don't remember any incredible stretches.
I thought he had a really good stretch.
Since the All-Star break?
Or maybe right before?
Well, he made it on the All-Star team. So, I mean, he had good stretches in the first half. An incredible 4-start stretch. He had a...
Like right before, did...
Right before he had a great 5-start stretch.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry, it was 4, where he gave up 1 earned run or fewer in each. But he has had a stretch of 3 straight quality starts at one point in the second half, but... No, he hasn't even, because one of them didn't go 6 innings.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm remembering wrong.
It's really bad.
You know who was excellent last night? Matt Moore, 25% owned, 6% started, 7 shutout innings of 2-hit ball with 9 strikeouts. How are we feeling about Matt Moore right now?
Well, a little better. I thought I was pretty much done with him after the previous couple of starts. But, in this particular start, still just 4 ground balls. Not that you would really expect that to change for Moore anyway. Always been a fly ball pitcher. And facing the Orioles, a team that chases a lot of pitches versus a guy who also has had some control issues. So I'm only mildly encouraged.
Okay. Are you looking at Matt Moore next season?
Oh, I'm certainly looking next season, yeah.
Looking. See looking. Look but don't touch.
All right, Jared Cozart.
No, he may touch. This is sounding weird.
Jared Cozart. Quality start in his return from the disabled list. Corey Kluber returned from his hamstring injury. Was on a 61, only threw 61 pitches, 4 innings, 2 earned runs allowed, 5 strikeouts, no walks. Are you starting Corey Kluber next week?
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
This is what Francona did with Carrasco when he returned from a 2-week absence, too. And Kluber didn't so much like getting taken out. It seemed like an off-the-cuff decision.
Well, Francona joked before the start that, he's on a pitch count, a 150 pitch count. So, guess he was fooling us all.
All right, and John Lackey, 7 shutout innings, 8 strikeouts, 2 walks. He's gotten 6 or more innings with 3 or fewer runs in 5 straight starts. Is he a must-start player for the final 2 weeks of the season?
You know, I'd meant to look into this because I'm midway through researching a blog post with players with extreme splits and what their last 2 weeks look like. Haven't gotten to Lackey yet, but continues to be great at Busch and just sort of mediocre on the road.
So must start for home starts down the stretch.
Yes. So if you can stall for about 20, 30 seconds, I can get to Mr. Lackey.
I feel like Lackey and Lynn have kind of done a Freaky Friday thing here recently.
Lackey obviously would be the mother in this instance,
because
he's older. You know, I feel like he's a little more buttoned down. I don't know. He was part of the fried chicken and beer brigade.
I don't know.
Maybe it's a reverse Freaky Friday.
I don't know that I could assign them roles specifically, but Lackey's strikeouts have been up recently, and Lynn's have been way down, and Lackey's just been better. Lackey has an ERA below 3 on the year.
Well, and it could get lower because The Cardinals have 7 games at home next week, Reds and Brewers. So Scott mentioned pretty good matchups for the hitters, but also a good matchup for Lackey against those hitters. And then road trip for the final week, but it's at the Pirates and at the Braves. I like that. So I'm going to call
might be Lackey a must start.
Must start rest of season.
All right, some bullpen news, or not news, but standouts. Sean Doolittle, 2 shutout innings last night, 2 strikeouts, 1 walk. He has 9 strikeouts and 8 2/3 innings since his return. He got off to a rough start, allowing runs in his first 2 outings. Feeling okay about Sean Doolittle right now?
His velocity hasn't come all the way back, but it's definitely improved from when we saw him earlier in the year, and the results have been good. I wish the A's have had more save opportunities to see kind of what they're thinking.
It's been an issue all season.
Yeah. But I think he's a possibility to be their closer going into next year.
All right. David Robertson allowed 3 runs on 3 hits and a walk in an inning of work last night. He's got 7 blown saves on the season. Greg Holland threw a scoreless night for the save last night. Came in a 4-run game with a runner on, got a double play. His velocity was still down 90.9 miles per hour with his fastball. Still worried about Greg Holland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I am.
All right, we'll go with 3 up, no down. Gregory Polanco, 2 for 5 with a home run. That's his 9th of the season. Since the All-Star break, he is on a 15-homer, let's say 21 stolen base pace. 283, 778 OPS. How are we feeling about Greg Holland moving forward and into next season?
Gregory Polanco.
There's the hat trick.
No, you're right on that one. I just get confused. They're right. The names are right next to each other on my screen.
Mine too. I'm a little underwhelmed by Polanco because he's had some periods this year where it seemed like he was maybe on the verge of breaking out. And I mean, these are obviously not bad stats, and you could take a big step forward next year. But I kind of wanted to see a little bit more, especially a little bit more power.
Yeah, I can agree with that assessment. He might be a post-type sleeper next year, though.
Yep.
He does seem to be trending the right way.
Yeah. All right. Martin Prado, 51% owned. He's hitting .305 with 5 home runs and 57 games since returning from his injury. Is he someone that you could – he's homered in consecutive games. Is he someone you could see sneaking into your lineup for the final 2 weeks of the season?
Well, would you replace Colton Wong with Martin Prado? I don't think I would.
I think I probably would, actually, because I definitely, I mean, the one thing that you can count on him for, I think, is batting average.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would sort of depend. I mean, if the one area I really needed help with was home runs and like in a roto league, no, I probably wouldn't do that, but I think in most scenarios I would.
All right, and is Ian Desmond back to being Ian Desmond? Do we feel confident in saying that?
Well, who is Ian Desmond?
That's...
I think he's back to being last year's version of Ian Desmond, not 2 years or 3 years ago.
A low-ish batting average guy with 20 homers and, you know, a very useful fantasy shortstop. He's hitting .274 with 11 home runs since the All-Star break and 212 at-bats.
Yeah, I miss the steals, though.
Yeah.
For me, that makes a big difference. So, yeah, he's usable, but he's not back to being an elite, which is where I thought he was going to be coming into the year.
All right. And he is a free agent in the offseason. We'll see where he goes. Scott.
Yeah.
You teased us with it. And gave us the whole thing. Best and worst hitting matchups of week 25.
Teased throughout the program here. That's an old person way of describing a podcast, calling it a program.
The broadcast.
So, let's start with the best matchups. That's usually the best place. Rockies are number one, and they're at home all week.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah, pretty much always number one when that is the case. The Mets are number two.
Best offense in baseball since the trade deadline.
And it's going to continue. Also worth noting, the Mets are facing 5 right-handers in their – or, sorry, 6 right-handers in their 7 games. So Michael Conforto –
yep.
Is definitely a guy to start. And maybe Daniel Murphy, too. He has some playing time issues, but against righties, you would expect him to play most every day. Also, the Dodgers, who are one of the teams traveling to Colorado. The White Sox, who are playing 8 games because of a doubleheader Monday against the Tigers. And the Cardinals, as I mentioned, in relation to Johnny Peralta, Stephen Piscotty, still looks like a good start this week. Other ones who I kind of passed over when I mentioned their team. Well, obviously, Corey Seager. Justin Turner for the Dodgers has been hitting well again and back to playing every day at third base. So with the series at Colorado, I like him. The White Sox with their 8 games, there's going to be some tough calls there because obviously 8 games is a good thing. I think Alexi Ramirez with his second half is a good call at shortstop. But Melky Cabrera and Adam Eaton, who have both been hitting well recently, really bad splits against left-handed pitchers. And the White Sox are in line to face 4 in those 8 games. And they're like the worst 4 pitchers they're going to face in those 8 games. So that's really tough. I don't think Melky and Eaton are automatic starts as hot as they've been and as good as it looks like the matchups are. Particularly in a 3 outfielder league, I kind of feel like you could do better. Worst matchups. The Reds have the worst, as I mentioned, followed by the Diamondbacks.
So on the Reds, who feel comfortable starting at this point? Votto
for sure.
Frazier,
yeah.
Are you sitting Suarez this week?
I mean, not everywhere, but I would, if I could, if I was in a position where I could bench him and play another shortstop, I probably would, sure.
Sitting him and Brandon Phillips in a 10-team league.
Yes, right. And Jay Bruce, as we talked about earlier.
Might be dropping Jay Bruce.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I did in a 3 outfielder league, so that's fair. Let's see. So Diamondbacks had the second worst matchups. And a bunch of lefties there also, too. So David Peralta, even Ender Inciarte doesn't hit lefties so well. Brewers have the third worst matchups. The Angels, who I mentioned earlier. The Phillies. Though in the Phillies' case, it was really a struggle to find a fifth team with bad matchups with all the September fill-ins.
Yeah.
So maybe don't avoid your Phillies so much. It helps that they don't really have any players you want to start anyway.
Pretty much, yeah.
But to backtrack a little here, CJ Cron is hot as he's been. I'm not starting him this week. Pujols in a shallower league with good options. I could sit him. Cole Calhoun, there's a bunch of lefties for the Angels, 4 lefties in their 6 games. So I think he's a possible sit in 3 outfielder leagues. And I think that's about it. The only team going without a DH this week is the Orioles, and you don't really care about that. So, yeah, that'll do it.
All right. Al.
All right.
Some weird to start pitchers.
It is weird. And one rule of thumb is if somebody's a righty and is on waivers and has 2 starts, don't bother. Because all the pitchers that I would even look into, they're all lefties.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of strange.
We talked about Matt Moore earlier. He's a 2-start pitcher. I think he's one to not pick up, right?
I would agree with that.
He's got at Boston, at Toronto. Both of those are very bad matchups for a player who's a fly ball pitcher with control issues.
Agreed. Yeah, you want to avoid Matt Moore. So a lefty who on the surface might look like you want to pick up, but several others that I would
much rather.
Can I ask
about one right-handed pitcher?
Okay, but you know I'm going to say bad things. Go ahead.
He's not widely available, so I more want to know if you're starting Luis Severino at Toronto, followed by the White Sox.
Right, yeah, because I am starting
Severino,
yeah. So I just want to make that caveat that I'm only talking about the more widely available righties.
Your John Grays, Mike Wright.
But even, you know, guys kind of in the mid-range like Chris Heston, Jared Weaver, who might be out there.
Yeah.
But are still fairly owned. I would avoid both of those guys. And Heston, that's a little deceiving. He's got the Padres and the A's on the road, which might look like pretty decent matches, but he's just not been throwing strikes at all lately.
Yeah.
So not trusting Heston. So who am I trusting?
Who are you trusting?
The one I like the best that I've seen on the list right now is somebody who's available just about everywhere, Martin Perez. Mm-hmm. He's kind of fits the prototype of actually somebody else who's a two-star pitcher who I would avoid, Brett Anderson, because he's got to start at Colorado.
There are two, him and J.A. Happ, both yep. in that 63-65% range, who start at Colorado. You got to avoid them.
Yep. On the other hand, Perez is not starting at Colorado. He's got the A's and the Astros both on the road. Astros on the road is a little tough, but you know, he's kind of got the Brett Anderson thing down in terms of actually, I think, better control than Anderson yeah. and pretty strong ground ball tendencies. And that's usually a pretty good combination for a two-star pitcher, you know, even a guy who's pretty much of a contact pitcher. He's going to give you enough over two starts. Could throw a lot of innings, you know, give you maybe 14 innings and, you know, then, you know, maybe 9 or 10 strikeouts over those 14 innings and good ratios all around. So I like Perez. And I'd say a close second would be Eduardo Rodriguez, with a very similar profile, but not as many ground balls. He gets the Rays and the Orioles at home. So I actually like his matchups a little bit better.
All right.
But the Rays can't be tough against lefties.
The Rays can hit lefties, yeah.
And Rodriguez has not been very consistent. So I'm going to give Perez a little bit of an edge. But those are my two faves.
He's a significantly less sexy pick, but he's available in 50% of leagues. I want to ask about Jonathan Nease.
Going against
Atlanta, against Cincinnati. Yeah, those are pretty good matchups.
Those are really good matchups. I don't.
Atlanta seems like they might be tanking. Like, it's hard to be this bad on accident.
Well, I don't know that. I think the front office put them in a position where they didn't expect them to win much at all.
Yeah.
Because they traded away all the useful players for future help. And a side effect of that, perhaps a beneficial side effect as far as the front office is concerned, is that
it's a basketball move. That's what they're doing.
You're going to lose. But I don't think, like, the players on the field and the guy setting the lineup is trying to lose.
Yeah. Trying to win.
But I put Nease in the Heston category. I don't really care how good the matchups look. Not going to be efficient. Could still get clobbered.
All right.
I want to throw one more guy.
One more name.
One more lefty out there, because this is really interesting to me. Henry Owens, who we talked about yesterday and coming off a really good start. Pretty good over the last five starts overall. Two of those came after the second and third ranking teams in terms of chase percentage. Mm. The Orioles and the Royals.
And he's a guy with control issues going back to the minors.
Yeah. Just one walk combined against those two teams and went very deep into those starts. Then he also had starts recently in that five-game span against the teams with the two lowest chase rates, the Blue Jays and the Yankees. So when I'm talking about chase, I'm talking about chasing out of the zone.
And not number of chases on their team.
Correct.
Okay.
Although the Yankees do have two, right?
One.
Whitley?
Yeah,
I mean,
two.
Not active, but. So in that regard, the Yankees have a pretty high chase rate. But in this regard, they're the lowest in the major leagues, and Owens, you know, walk the yard in both of those games.
All right. Let's move on to some injuries, news, and notes before we finish off with emails heading into week 25.
Do you want to know who Owens is facing?
Oh, sorry. Who's Owens facing?
He's facing the Rays and then the same Orioles that he dominated the other day. So
it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, one very patient team and one very impatient team. A two-start week. I think he's all right.
All right. Injuries, news, and notes. Danny Duffy sent to the bullpen. Jeremy Guthrie returns to the rotation. Chris Medlin has the inside track to the number four starting job in the postseason. Trevor Bauer was sent to the...
Our feet made contact, Chris. That was a little uncomfortable.
I was just trying to keep going. Scott, you're just trying to derail me today.
It's not the first time that's happened on the podcast, but I think it's the first time it actually stopped the podcast.
Trevor Bauer sent to the bullpen. Good riddance. Matt Latos designated for assignment. Good riddance. He had a devilish ERA, 6.66. But a 3.55 FIP overall. Is there any hope for a Matt Latos resurgence next season?
I think with good health. I don't know that was the problem with the Dodgers with Latos, but you know, we saw him in a stretch with the Marlins where he looked very good. So, yeah, I do hold that hope.
Manny Benuelos' rookie season is over. He will have bone spurs removed from his elbow.
Tank.
Troy Tulowitzki is seeing a specialist for his shoulder. Could get a better idea of his timetable, but doesn't seem like the regular season's in play. Aaron Nola may not pitch through the end of the season. His next start could be his last. He is only four innings above his total from last year, though.
That doesn't seem like enough.
Yeah, I agree.
If you want to, if you want him to throw even more next year, right?
Tank. Jorge Soler is available.
They're having a tanking competition.
The Phillies, not the Sixers.
The bottom of the NL East really is. And then the Marlins are screwing it up by winning five straight series for the first time in 12 years.
They don't know what they're doing.
Jorge Soler is available to play for the Cubs. Stephen Vogt has begun limited baseball activities as Drubal Cabrera had an MRI on his knee, hopes to return in a few days. Carlos Gomez could return over the weekend. He still has not swung a bat. And Matt Garza is done for the season. His wife gave birth to twins, and I guess that's a lot of work. He needs to help his wife. He's expected back in the rotation in 2016. There were some rumblings that he was not particularly pleased with the organization, but apparently they've ironed everything out.
Oh, okay, because they asked him to go to the bullpen, and he said, no, thanks, I'm good.
Yeah. I mean, not really sure it's his choice. All right, we'll move on to some emails.
Ask, you know, you can say
they
no.
Ask, yeah. We'll move on to some emails to finish off the show. FantasyBaseball@CBSi.com. Adam included this email with a little pick-me-up for me. Chris, you do a very good job filling in for Adam Azer. Thanks. Thanks to you guys, I have the number one seed and have a bye, but have Tulo as his shortstop, so he needs to pick someone up. 10-team head-to-head categories with extra base hits, walks, total bases as extra categories.
Oh.
Segura, Suarez, Yunel Escobar. Who are you picking up of those three? Suarez.
Yeah, with the extra base category, I'll go Suarez.
There's also a walks category.
None of those three really
That's true.
Help you there.
Yeah.
All right. Adam from Chicago, please help me set my playoff lineup for next week. Needs to start one of these two start pitchers, Shelby Miller, Jaime Garcia, and J.A. Happ. I'm going Jaime Garcia.
So am I.
Yeah,
it's a strikeout. Strikeouts are worth 1.25 points in a head-to-head points league, which is actually...
Whoa.
No, it's a little higher than ours.
Ours is 0.5.
0.5.
And one, the difference between 1 and 0.5 is significant.
But it's not like Shelby Miller's a significantly higher strikeout rate guy than Jaime Garcia at this point. J.A. Happ has been since getting the Pirates, but
yeah,
he's at Colorado, at Chicago. I don't think he's in the conversation.
I still go Garcia, but, you know, who's more likely to have a 10-strikeout game, Miller or Garcia? I think
Miller. Yeah, for sure, but going against the best offensive baseball since the trade deadline in the Mets and a Marlins team that is bad, but has been playing better, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, not lately.
Yeah. Garcia is a very safe pick. I just feel like Miller is a little higher upside given the format.
Yeah.
But I'll still take Garcia. I'm just adding that into the mix.
Yeah, Mets are a dangerous matchup.
Yeah, which it's a weird thing to say.
Yes.
Those words don't sound right coming out of your mouth. Like, you make those words and they just feel wrong. Hairy shoulders from Flushing. Head-to-head points, playoff, roto-ish lineups, 9-pitcher spots, daily league, 24 max starters. He's in a race to the finish. He will hit his max 24 starters this weekend, but he needs help in any help that he can get in his head-to-head points playoff. What are some middle relievers who might be worth picking up? Wade Davis
Holder
being the
worth
obvious
2 points.
Call, but probably not available.
Well, I actually in a league where I'm going for relief ratios now because saves are kind of out of the question, and I'm good shape for.
Well, it's a points league before you get far down the ratio path.
Well,
head to head points playoffs.
Okay, okay, so
and holds are worth 2 points.
All right, gotcha. Holds are tough. All right, well, I'll just throw out the couple of names of guys that I picked up in this league. Liam Hendricks and Yimi Garcia.
Okay. All right. We could also throw out.
I'm trying to pull up Holds leaders.
Yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, obviously, Hairy Shoulders, if that is your real name, you can do the same.
I'm just going to look at guys who are pitching a lot out of the bullpen. Who have been very good but aren't getting saves. So Alex Wilson might count. Yusmeyr Petit might count. Brad Brock might count. There are a lot of good. You shouldn't have a hard time finding middle relief help. I will say that.
It is abundant. That's why I think unless you play in a really deep league, it's kind of silly to make it such a impactful part of your league's outcome, because it's kind of like, if I can use a fantasy football analogy.
You can. You are on the Fantasy Football Podcast.
Yes. IDP leagues, unless everybody's rostering a ton of IDP players, like as many as they're rostering offensive players, it's kind of arbitrary because there's so many good ones to choose from. Why even bother having that format? You know, if you're just doing like three IDP players, which is a format I used to play in when I first started playing fantasy football, it was just...
Everybody
can find three really good IDP players.
That makes sense.
And that's how I feel with middle relievers in a shallower league like this.
All right. Philip Cooper, last email, asks, start or sit? Steven Vogt for his health in week 25. He could come back, but I think you probably have to sit him. It's a 10-team, head-to-head, mixed points league.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sit, vote.
I would sit vote. Yeah.
And Adam Lind, what do you think of Adam Lind's matchups?
You may have noticed I mentioned the Brewers have among the worst. So that was perceptive of this emailer for noting that. And I think I would sit him.
Yep, and Lind's on the list of guys that I referenced earlier with the extreme splits.
Yes,
and Brewers only have three games at home. Rest of season starting next week, and I think it's the last series of the year.
And he's a significant home road split guy.
Yep.
And a pretty significant.
So you could pretty much be done with Adam Lind.
All right. You might be able to drop Adam Lind based on splits. And that's it. That's all. That's it for our Friday podcast. Good luck in week 25. Are you guys still alive in any leagues?
I'm alive and kicking.
I've got
in all but one.
My bye week ends in my big league. I've got to get back to it. I'm a little scared. But I've got Jose Fernandez and Corey Kluber back, so.
Ooh, that's
feeling
a big
good.
Boost.
It's fortuitous timing.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Good luck in week 25, everyone. We'll see you on Monday. For Al Melchior and Scott White, I'm Chris Towers. Goodbye.